Follow the White Rabbit is a game that will teach you practical politics. Practical politics is called practical politics because it is non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is, of course, rule-based politics, which is what you do at the voting booth. It's very, very rule-based and timeline-based, you know, every 4 years, every 2 years, so on and so forth. And full-spectrum practical politics is engaging and taking out an opponent or a system or a corporation, so on and so forth, by any means necessary under the rules or under the laws, but never breaking the rules or never breaking the laws. But to understand anything, we first have to teach you practical politics, which is non-voting politics. The first basics are the art of staying on point or using a talking point and being able to say it over and over again to make your point, not arguing, just making a point. But this is an introduction, again, to Follow the White Rabbit, and Follow the White Rabbit is a game that will teach you practical politics. Yes, yes, I know you missed me. I was away for a couple weeks or a few weeks. I haven't put anything up, but that's okay. You guys can get caught up with everything going on. A lot of new listeners out there for the month of October, and I'm recording this on about the 27th, 28th, and for the month of October thus far, we have about 110 gigs downloaded. I don't really know what that means, but they tell me that's a whole lot of stuff for a website that most people don't even know exists. So that's pretty fascinating, isn't it? But we're on a brand new website. You should be looking at a brand new website. Yes, very nice. You'll see a nice little... You'll see me. Yes, Horace the Avenger with the big lightning bolt eyes. And we'll be adding to the characters. We'll be adding to the graphics. And all the characters are coming to life. The Green Goddess, Godzilla, is coming to life. She's going to be Razzle Dazzle. And we're going to bring the Pink Rabbit Banksters and Elitesters to life. Wait, you see the Pink Rabbit Banksters and Elitesters. It's a surprise, but it's funny stuff. We have no mercy on anyone. But we're bringing them to life. And yes, I've heard you. Those of you that have seen the graphics, these graphics have been out a while. Even some of the other graphics have come out. There's more graphics out than are actually on the site right now because some of them are still being touched up. And I heard you loud and clear that you wanted a t-shirt. Every day I get emails from someone asking me where they send money to. There's no way to send us money. Everything I have to say is yours all gratis. It's free. There are no PayPal links. You can send money to your favorite organizations. Send money to that political cesspool. We need actual conservative channels. I'm not actually a conservative, but I'm more radical. Yeah, I run the White Rabbit Party for Radicals. but you got to have every channel under control, and the political cesspool is the only legitimate conservative channel because they're the only ones on a consistent message, and they do a good job. But there's plenty of places to give money to if you want to give money away. But Horace won't take your money. I have heard your call for t-shirts, and my first response to several emails, we didn't plan on selling anything. And I don't. I won't be selling anything. So that's the bad news. But the good news is the people that did the graphics have this huge t-shirt-like factory where they make up their own t-shirts. They do all kinds of stuff. They send them all over the planet, I guess. They wholesale, and they do all kinds of variety of different things on different handful of different websites they own. And as a fan of the show, they did the graphics. I was pretty flattered by that. But they also said that if you want t-shirts, that they'd be happy to put up a cart, and I guess you'd order it, and they'd send it out, and that type of thing. They'd send it right to you. I originally didn't think I was going to be selling anything, so I said, no, I don't think they're going to want any t-shirts. I don't see why that'd be... I mean, the graphics look cool, but I can't imagine that. Well, I was very wrong. And so we heard you loud and clear. The good news is, the bad news is that I'm not doing anything. The good news is someone else is. So you'll see a card up there and a t-shirt. If you want any of the graphics in the t-shirt, they're going to bring out a few of the graphics as t-shirts. And if there's any other graphics that you want as a t-shirt, they're all in their system. So they can immediately put it on a t-shirt. So you just, I guess, send something in and say, you know what, I want that Green Goddess on a t-shirt, on a white tee or something. And they can send it to you wherever you're at in the world, I guess. I don't really have a problem with that if you want to buy a t-shirt. I do have a problem with me getting up and starting a t-shirt business and then sending you t-shirts. I don't have that kind of time. The good news is someone else does. Someone else is already in that business and they're already a fan. The question would be, does Horace the Avenger get a kickback? Yeah, I do. I can't even tell you what it is. I have no idea, but I will get a kickback, so you don't have to worry about that. I will get a kickback, and I'll use it for doing cartoon books someday or children's books. And will I get rich from it? I guess I could if you buy like a few hundred thousand of them or something. I'd get rich, rich, rich. Yeah, but you keep on sending me emails that you want that graphic on a t-shirt. The bad news is I'm not in the t-shirt business, and this isn't about a business. The good news is the people that did the graphics are. So if you want it, you can order it. But you don't have to buy anything. The MP3s are free. There is no way to send me money. You don't have to. Everything I have to say is yours. That's a simple game. Me a white rabbit, you a white rabbit. Not me a business rabbit, me trying to charge you something. That's another game. But if you want a t-shirt, I don't have a problem with that. Let the graphics people make some money, and I will get a kickback. And by all means, buy hundreds of thousands of them if you want to. But that's on the t-shirts. But I've heard you loud and clear with all the emails, and thank you very much. And now we're going to talk about, on this MP3, I'm going to use this as a transition. I'm going to do some Q&As. I'm going to talk about some current political trends. I'm going to talk about, I'm going to answer questions from the Flames of the East. Yes, little Japanese rabbits, the indigenous yellow rabbits of East Asia. And some Chinese, some Koreans have asked me questions, some in-depth questions. Some pretty hot and heavy questions, actually. But since there is such thing as a Flame of the East, I will give them what I've heard about them. I'll give them a primer, an open introduction. Many people listening to this think that Japan got nuked for acting Asian. Japan did not get nuked for acting Asian. Japan got nuked for acting Aryan. Yeah, our enemy is not going to nuke Iran. They're not going to nuke Iran for acting like Persians. They will nuke them for acting Aryans. But Japan is the Flame of the East. Yeah, they are the Aryans of the East. It's their destiny. They put up the rising sun prior to 1950. They don't have a question in it. But I'll go into that. I'm going to give them a little bit because they've asked me some questions. They don't have anyone to talk to about this stuff. And since they got nuked for acting Aryan, I figured the least I could do is answer some questions. It'll be a little bit broader than Japan, though, yes, but I'll give them a more cosmic perspective that one of the wise men gave me. And who knows if it's true, but I'll do my best to answer that question because I think they deserve it. Now, in the current politics, what's going on is that people running Anglosphere are in a little bit of trouble. War with Iran is shaping up. It's not if, but when. I don't know if it's next week. I don't know if it's by the time you're listening to this right on Halloween. I don't know if it's going to be next year. Hopefully it's next year so we can talk for a while because this is going to get funny. That war is never funny, but practical politics and being on the right message, and once the harmonics get booming in a certain area, it can be comedy to watch this stuff work. But they're in a little trouble. And what's happened is that Putiput, the Germans, the Russian-German-Italian axis is full bore. It's now been written about in the New York Times. I talked about this with you in the first MP3. You pretty much have a white rabbit hole. A white rabbit hole is coming into formation. Now, are we going to get greedy and take the whole top of the planet? I don't know. Depends on what that white rabbit god wants to do with our Godzilla. We don't really control her now. She's coming in 2012. She'll have a mind of her own. But that is secure. That is coming. There's nothing anyone can do about it. For certain Anglosphere parties that are tied to the Rothschild and Rockefellers, for them to prevent it, they gotta either start a war in Eastern Europe. To do that, to cause problems in Eastern Europe, they have to pretty much overcome not only the FSB, which is the modern KGB, they got to overcome what we will define as Russian and German soft power working together. No one on the planet can overcome that right now. No one on the planet. There's also another factor, Italy. I haven't ever mentioned Italy before in this axis. Italy is very critical, not because the Italians are necessarily critical, although we love spaghetti, as we do. We love the indigenous white rabbits down there in Italy. But they got this little state there called the Vatican. It's a religious state. It is an actual state. It's a country on its own. It's on its own time frame. It's on its own everything else. But it's run by this new Popey Pope. And Putiput has him a Popey Pope, and they signed this deal in 2007. Signed a deal, I'm guessing that's to make Russia part of Europe and everything else. And that Popey Pope is, he's German. Yes, he's German. He's a very significant pope. In fact, he's probably going to be my favorite pope of all times. And I'm not even Catholic. How about that? But he's a popey pope. And many times, you know, this stuff is all wide sky, so I don't know the full nitty gritty. I don't need to. I know the direction. That's what I look at as trends. You could say what you want to, but you know, what was he when he was a young kid? He was in the Hitler Youth. Yeah, he was in the Hitler Youth. I'm guessing it didn't make much of an impression. I don't know how growing up under flaming swastikas and whatnot and marching and listening to Hitler all day and night, I don't think that makes an impression. I don't think he possibly, you know, probably just outgrew it. Probably not an undercover lover or anything. Probably not dreaming of doing that German high step from the Vatican City. Sure. It's just a quinky dink. But this should be interesting. But he is a German, and he lets those Muslims get away with stuff. But why would a German let Muslims get away with stuff? Well, if you're playing for next week, you wouldn't. If you're playing for 5 years from now or into a certain scenario and just say 2010, 2012, you would. Why? Because it creates a problem. Yeah, if you throw in a few Somali immigrants in Maine, you can't control it. You know, they're going to throw them in. Well, you might as well control the solution, right? Because you know, at a certain point in time, if someone creates a problem, it's going to get a reaction. It's not going to get the reaction they think. So by all means, if it comes down to throwing a few Somali Muslims in, throw a few hundred thousand in, or throw a 30 or 40,000. They don't have any power. Yeah, they can commit a lot of crime and whatnot, but you might as well at least create a big reaction so you can get the solution. There's many different ways to look at attacking an enemy. You're used to what you see is what you get, and that's fine. It's fine, but that ain't the game going. And it is frustrating, but it won't be frustrating for very much longer. But for the Anglo elites, at least I hate the pink rabbit banksters and elitesters. They have to block off Eastern Europe. They have to cause problems. They have to cause war. What they call them is the white scum countries. That's what they call them. They call them something like that. Real nice. Shows you what they think of our race. Yeah, divide and rule. And prevent that German-Russian access. But it's pretty difficult to do. It's pretty difficult to do with the popey pope. Maybe you don't think the Vatican has power. Well, some days they don't. Some segments there don't. Some segments there did and don't now. It's a wild game, but they are everywhere. They're on every street corner on the planet. And who knows? Who knows? But you start talking about the FSB and German soft power. On top of that, I'd invite you to look at all the cross-investment. The Russians, since this economic crisis have hit, the Germans have used it as an excuse. You see, you had a problem. You had a big economic crisis. Opel was going out of business, so on and so forth. All these German industries were starved of capital. There's a reaction. The reaction is we got to shore up our business. So solution, the Putiput came in with that solution. He came in with that German high-step solution. He says the solution is I got all this extra capital from oil wealth and we can do cross-investment. He bailed out Opel. I'm sorry, he didn't bail out Oprah. He bailed out Opel. Yeah, he bailed out Opel. The bailing out Opel got Angela Merkel reelected, right? Got Angela Merkel reelected. And now, guess what? She's, interesting enough, grew up in Eastern Europe. She speaks fluent Russian and German. I'm sure this is all just a coincidence. Maybe not. Russians did huge investments. They're considered KGB investments, but you know they have different groups there, and they invest government money. Siemens, all these groups were starved for capital. I mean, we're talking about it's a who's who of German corporations that were starved for capital. You see, problem, reaction, solution. It's the basics. It's very simple stuff. It works. Why does it work? It just does. That's why it's called the basics. It's like networking. It just works. But there are several German corporations. Of course, to be able to do anything against Russia or Germany, you have to solve Iran. You have to solve your Muslim problem. You see, they've been busy with this Muslims trying to change Islam. Well, you can't really change Islam until you solve Israel. You can't solve Israel until you split up your groups and sell off the Jews, which you'll gladly do. Some segments will. The Jews will sell off the Jews. It's nothing new. Pink rabbits are by nature traitors, so they'll be traitors of their own. It's a mindset. There was also a fascinating thing that happened in the. Let me look up. I'll give you the extent of the corporations that took Russian money. It's kind of. I have it right here. I got it in a. I got it in some kind of report. I'm going to look it up for you. Here we go. It was as wide as Volkswagen, Siemens. The Kremlin is totally midlife. I mean, the Kremlin, actually parties from the Kremlin themselves came in after Opel, once they opened the door to the solution, and they came in with direct subsidized investments. And we're talking everything from E.ON, that's E.ON, even like Wintershall, ThyssenKrupp, the big names, Volkswagen, Siemens. And they basically purchase it outright. And remember, Gerhard Schroeder, you can't look at what these guys say because we really don't know anything until the end comes. And this type of thing has been fought long ago. Right now you're just seeing the fruits come to fruition. But it's a birthing process, and birthing process can get kind of ugly. But anyways, Anglosphere has a huge problem. They have a huge problem because they went to war with Islam. They were running a... You know, those neocons thought they were being cute. They flooded the West with Muslims. Yeah, I mean, some parties in Europe, I'll get to this in a minute, but the BNP, certain elements of the British National Party, have spread the word that the Nazis flooded Europe with Muslims. Well, there may have been a couple Nazis that let in some Muslims into Germany at one time or something. But let's face it, our enemy in Anglosphere flooded the place with non-Europeans. They've flooded the West with Muslims. They basically helped non-European immigration, and that ended up being a lot of Muslims. Even in critical places like America, you have huge Muslim populations. They knew about it. They didn't have a problem with it. Why? Because they're non-European, right? So the neocons flooded the West with Islam. Then they went to war with Islam. You know, you have a problem. You have a bunch of Muslim immigration. You have a reaction. You go to war with Islam, and then, of course, you know, you have a thesis, basically. You have there are two contradictions, but then you have a synthesis of those two. You know, you go to war with Islam, and then you end up flooded with Muslims, and then you end up with a synthesis of the two. The synthesis is World War III, and when the West goes to clean out the Muslims, then they can expand Greater Israel. That's what they were playing. You know, they flood us with Muslims, and they go to war against the Muslims, which obviously is going to get a reaction, right? It's a whole series of problem, reaction, solutions. And into that, they would expand Greater Israel, because the Muslims really don't have any power. They have power given to them. They understand that. The problem was that they went in, they decided to go in and try to change the Muslims. The Muslims are such a big group. They got in way over their heads, and someone was way ahead of them. They weren't... and they got sidetracked. You know, that can happen when you get cute. When you get cute, you can get smacked. And they've been smacked pretty hard. They got bit off a lot more than they can chew, and now they're going to be forced to swallow it. So they could cause some problems if they solved the Iran problem. Can they solve the Iran problem? Well, they could have if they had a green revolution, but they don't have that, which means they got to go to war. They got to go to war with Ahmadinejad, and they don't know what they're facing. They're not necessarily facing Iran, but they don't know what they're facing. They don't know. There's a lot of uncertainty here. So it's kind of interesting to watch this. But it's like with immigration. You know, you flood in a bunch of Mexicans or whatever. Well, that creates a problem. That problem is going to get a reaction. It's not necessarily going to be what you think, though. And that reaction, whoever guides that reaction, is going to develop a solution. The problem is that it's went too far. You know, you can boil a frog to death if you raise the temperature slowly, but you jack up that temperature. If someone runs over to the stove, and I don't care if it is a national socialist, and they hit that thing up the high, that frog is going to jump out. You know, you got to watch it. But that's the game they were playing, and they got themselves in a bit of trouble. So if they can solve the Iranian problem, sure. Are they going to solve it? No. They would have to solve it. Their last chance was a green revolution, I guess. But this type of thing was over long ago. By the time the Pope signed something with Putin, by the time Poopy Pope signed something with Putin in 2007, it was probably planned 10 years prior. And that's how that goes. That's how that goes, but that's shaping up. I don't see any way out of war because they don't have a way out. Oh, I guess they could. They could let everything collapse, which is what's starting to happen right now. They can't hold everything up because you can't print enough money. You're at a time on the calendar where everything's going to fail. It's time for it to fail. It's a change of season. It's time for change. It's very true. Globally, nothing's going to work. And they'll go to war, and after that, I expect to see all kinds of hoopla and stuff like that, and someone will show up promising us goodies, and it should be interesting after that. So just hold your horses on everything. What can you do? You can be on a consistent message, and you can obviously prepare your family for whatever. Most of you are very prepared, because white rabbits always are. They got their 5 billion shell, 12-gauge shotgun shells from Walmart. They got their 30-06s lined up. But that's fine, too. You can always be prepared. Let's see what else we got here. Hal Turner was let out of jail, or I'm sorry, he was released on parole, he was released on bond, some kind of huge bond, smoking a cigar. Yeah, a buddy in law enforcement was talking about this. If informants get released on bond, Matt Hale does not. Yeah, they don't release anyone on our side on bond. Yeah, you got an informant released on bond. What's interesting will be to find out who threw him in jail and for why. If someone threw him in jail to blow his cover, because that's a good way to blow someone's cover. Yeah, I mean, if you got some big snitch out there, which is what he was doing, that's what he admitted to doing. He's taking money for his radio show, then he's lying to people saying he's going to go broke if he doesn't get money. Then he's getting all this money from donations and the FBI and whatnot's letting him keep it. That's what he admitted to in court, I believe. If you have something like that, it's kind of pretty low. he's spying on right-wing, and on top of that, he sounded like a typical so-called conservative or reactionary conservative. The difference is he went over the line on violence. Typically, reactionary or so-called conservatives don't talk about anything violent, but he mixed that in. And that's kind of dangerous. Yeah, it's obviously very dangerous if you got associated with something like that. But he got out, and he's smoking a cigar and stuff like that. It's not very cool, but we'll have to see about Mr. Turner, but obviously it's pretty low stuff. It'd be one thing if he's doing what he claimed to be doing, helping out the FBI and setting all this up, but it's a whole nother thing when you sit online and you cry for money every day having people send you money. That's kind of crappy. If you're getting money to do something from some government unit, you don't sit there and run some game like that. Everything comes out in the wash, but it'll be funny to find out who nailed him into jail. Because someone obviously doused some flames on his credibility. The man doesn't have any credibility right now. Hopefully you're not sending him money. Hopefully you don't think that, you'd have to have a handful of government agents sit up there and testify for him to validate all his stories and stuff like that. But, everything comes out in the wash. He admitted to taking money and snitching. It's not cool. But that's pretty funny. There will be a big picture, too, of him smoking a cigar, getting out on this huge bond. I think it was like a $500,000 bond or something like that. Yeah, they're not going to... If you got charged with what he got charged with, and right now they're not letting you out. If you're your average undercover lover, steely-eyed little woofer, you get charged on those charges, they're not letting you out. But, traders get cut all kinds of deals today. Next week it may not be so nice for traders, but it should be interesting to see who threw them in jail. What exactly happened? That's a good way to blow someone's cover, isn't it? Yeah, if there's one, if you got some big snitch sitting out there causing problems, you want everyone to know who he is. Well, there's a simple solution to that, isn't there? Yeah. Throw him in jail for a while. He come out. And he immediately came out and said, "I'm an FBI snitch." Well, now you know. Yeah. Say what you want to about Dr. Duke, but they had him pegged. Someone had good info on him long ago. I don't know. Anytime anyone talks about shooting someone, they're crazy. A smart lone, steely-eyed lone wolf ain't saying anything. It's just common sense. Let's see what else in the news. Nikki Griffin takes the heat. Yeah, the BBC got on him, took the heat. I was asked, you know, all my different takes on this. Well, he's not on a very good consistent message, is he? He's on the defensive. Can that be good? Yeah, the glass is always half full. Nick, what he looks like is a common British man being attacked because he can't say anything he wants to say under his speech loss. That's always a positive because that draws sympathy. White rabbits are very prone to fairness. They like the underdog. They don't like seeing someone be treated unfair like that. They especially don't like it because they identify with that. They've all been treated like that, so that's very useful. On the other hand, he said some things that you got to watch. You got to watch. He's basically talking our party's line on Israel. I mean, he's talking our enemy's line on Israel. I don't know why he compromises. You know, the man has a clear line of demarcation his whole entire life, and over the past few years, he's compromised himself, or he has the appearance of compromising himself to me. The easiest way to tell you whose baseball team you're on is to be on the consistent message of that baseball team. If you're on a baseball team, if you're on our baseball team, well, you got plenty of talking points. You got a consistent message to work in. You advertise. You advertise who you play baseball for. If my enemy's writing your talking points, or if you're saying something my enemy tells you to say, you're not advertising. You're playing baseball for us. That's the only challenge here. And there's a lot of mixed messages. Now, he's clearly not advertising. He's in love with the Jews, and there's no possible way he believes all that nonsense. So, I mean, there's good. The good news is that the average Britner. The average Britner identifies with him. You know, there's two challenges, and I'll go ahead and answer one of the questions from one of the Asian commenters. I think he's from Japan or something. But you know, there's two challenges with what we're doing. One, you only have a handful of leaders out there, and they don't like using each other's stuff without giving credit. He doesn't want to use probably Bob's stuff or any of our stuff without giving us credit. There could be another reason. There are three reasons, actually. The other reason is he could be a little hard-headed, a little egotistical, wants to do it his own way. And that's fine as well. They're out there. There's a big upside to being hard-headed. Usually a lot of nationalists are very, very hard-headed. Yeah, they are. Very hard-headed. Nationalism is idealism. I'm not idealistic. You just think I am. Everyone thinks someone like me is idealistic. You're going to be in for a rude awakening. But Mr. Griffin is an idealist. He's a nationalist. Nationalists always deal with regret in the past. I don't deal with either. The past is useless. You can't bring that back. Can't bring back the Queen and Her Majesty 400 years ago or whatever. It's gone. Forget about it. The future will be a lot brighter than that garbage. But Nicky Griffin, you know, he took a lot of heat, you know, and the average person sees him in that category. But, you know, having someone hard-headed like that has a big upside at the local level. Because in Britain, if you want to do anything, you've got to have the local level. You've got to organize at the local level. And I've yet to see a good organizer at the local level that wasn't hard-headed on some issues. So that's why he's been so good at organizing at the local level. That is an upside. And you never really know. You never really know. What I will look for is we have a handful of young BNP listeners from Britain, and I will look for them to be on a consistent message. And once they start clipping a consistent message, they will move. Certain elements in the UK will help them. Yeah, I know that for a fact. I know that for a fact. They're looking for you to be on a consistent message. I'm not talking to you by accident or for accident. They're looking for a variety of different things. Put together networks, put together ad hoc networks, so on, so forth, etc. But if they're on a consistent message, and I see elements of Team Griffin shut them down, John Tyndall style, they pull John Tyndall and shut them down, well, then that'll tell me something, won't it? Yeah, that'll tell you something. But by and large, he took some heat. He's not on a very good message because he doesn't believe, you know, he doesn't believe it. On the other hand, it's a politically correct society, and everyone, the average Briton, sees himself as Nick Griffin. So that's a good thing. The bad news will be is if some young BNPer sails, and you will sail on a consistent message. I've told you this time and time again. On this consistent message, you will sail. You might have to make it your own. You can actually, in Anglosphere, you can do it just like I gave it to you. You know, I've done this for you a handful of times, and I'll try to redo the talking points and modernize them. That's on the schedule for the new website. That might be up as soon as Sunday, November 1st or Halloween, October 31st or November 1st. But if I see a young BMPer on a consistent message or a handful of them, and they get squashed, Tyndale style, like John Tyndale, they shut them down. Well, that's because they don't want that consistent message there, because they don't want them advertising for another team. That won't be good. This won't be good. The upside is the UK, as far as it's good, but it's not as critical as elements of the United States. In the UK, you got to have the local level to have anything. You got to have everything from local level. The United States is very funny. It's a republic that was made into a shamocracy. It is winner take all. You could end up, there's been X many presidential administrations where no one knew anyone in the White House when they came to Washington. That can't happen in London. That can't happen in Paris. That can't happen in Berlin. It just doesn't happen in Europe. That can happen in America. In other words, Ronald Reagan came to power and no one knew who anyone there was. That's unprecedented. You could get a David Duke in power. You could get a President Duke, and no one in Washington will know anyone there, and they will take control and do whatever they feel like doing. That can happen in Washington. So that's one big ideal. That is the difference. You have to be a good local organizer, and he's very hard-headed, like all nationalists, and that's good. That can be good. He also has an ego. But the answer, an Asian asked a question on why this approach. Well, the two challenges were there's only a handful of leaders, and none of them want to be on a consistent message without giving someone credit. So you got to demystify practical politics. I demystified it by demystifying Mr. Whitaker. At the same time, I did not add a new name for them to thank. I don't want these emails thanking me too much. It's no big deal. I'm just doing my job for you. So I did it in character. I did it, made up a character, Horace the Avenger. The ideal on the direction to go to was given to me by a friend. Some research was done. Most of you listening to this go to a variety of different news sources. You listen to something on Stormfront. You listen to something on one of those white nationalist channels. You listen to the political cesspool or David Duke. But you're also going somewhere else for the information. You get your little conspiracy fix or whatever. You're going to those InfoWars channels. Well, we want to dominate every energy flow. I don't want you going anywhere. So, and there's also an interesting caveat. No one there talks from a racial perspective. So I talked about the different stuff with the revisionist history and Shark Hunters in a way you never heard before, because those are legitimate channels. And I talked about Joseph P. Farrell, who's out there, but he's well-sourced. And they've all been on InfoWars. They've all been on that. That's a whole channel, but it's from a distinct racial perspective. Because the premise is, if you're going to talk, you better talk about something unique to get their attention. You know, because giving you talking points is pretty simple. Teaching you practical politics is not rocket science. It's very simple. It's redundant. It's repeating. That's all it is. Repeating, and if you got any talent for it. If you got any talent for it, you'll sail. But it's very simple. Very simple stuff. Entertaining you is not. So they came up with that, and that worked. I came up with the characters and that type of thing, and that's where we went. and that's why. There is another factor, and it has to do with the first factor. Anytime you help a little white kid out, they want to thank you, and they want to thank Nick Griffin for standing up for them. Well, that's good if you're Nick Griffin. You want, obviously he's a leader who wants recognition, but that is the antithesis of practical politics. When you say, in your opinion, I'm a racist, in your opinion, Mr. Griffin's a racist, you're just saying it because he's white. Anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. In your opinion, the BMP is racist. You're just saying it because they're white. Anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. Well, you don't ever have to thank us. That's the president doesn't thank anyone for writing his speeches. That's not how it works. So that it became kind of difficult. It's difficult because there's not that many people out there trying to help you. And what you see is what you get type of fashion, like a Mr. Whitaker. And so that's a problem. So when it comes to Nikki Griffin, I'll look for to see what happens when some young BMPers hit a consistent message. I'm guessing that he just doesn't know how to work it in, and he's just juggling a lot of balls, because our enemy has pretty big power base in London still. Our enemy has a bigger power base in London than it does right now in Washington. I mean, they have lockdown on certain parts of London. So I don't know what he's doing. I don't know what's going on, but we'll see. Everything comes out in the wash. But, you know, the German-Russian-Italian axis is coming together. Anglosphere is busted. They're busted 100 trillion times over in America alone. The UK is even in a worse debt situation than America, believe it or not. They're in trouble. They're in trouble. Let's see what else I can talk about. I get asked these emails from some of these old timers, you know, what am I going to do about the Mexican problem? In the U.S., if you've been to the USA, little white rabbit, you know we got a Mexican problem. Yeah, of course, it's not a real Mexican problem because no one's flooding Mexico with non-Mexicans and giving them affirmative action, special rights and privileges, and free health care, are they? No, only white rabbits are faced with this challenge. But I was asked what to do about the Mexicans. My short answer is simple. I'd enforce a law. You think the law is nice? It is not. The law is a law. You know, exercising the law, enforcing the law is very simple. What can you do under the law? Well, think about it. Why don't you do your homework? I'll also give you a test in practical politics. You can look up the Brown Berets. I don't know how to spell it, but it's Brown Berets. And they've been around a long, long time, and they're a mestizo organization. They've had up several websites over the past 15 years, you know, ever since the invention of the World Wide Web. All these nationalist groups have their own website now, which is good. Unfortunately, they got their own website recruiting for basic training online in a foreign territory. That's a no-go. You can't have a pseudo paramilitary organization recruiting for basic training in a foreign country. You get yourself in a lot of trouble very quickly. You can go ask your little skinheads what happened. What would happen if they put up a membership organization and they allowed broad recruiting of people online for basic training? Well, some FBI agent would come in there and they'd create a problem. They'd create a violent, some kind of little violent incidents of violence. Next thing you know, there'd be a reaction. And the reaction from the public would allow the authorities to come in with a big solution. That solution would probably be some kind of broad crackdown. They'd contaminate all the other organizations. So use your imagination. You got a broad spectrum, but you're used to what you see is what you can get. Well, you can go a lot of places under the law. But I would just simply enforce the law. And there's many different avenues to do that, and the law is not nice. It's just the law. But a membership organization recruiting on foreign territory? No, I saw that 10 years ago. And I'm sure someone has already had, who knows what's already in there. But you can't do that. You're insane if you're going to have a membership organization recruiting for basic training in 2009 anywhere on planet Earth. I don't care if you're in the Uyghur Republic of China and you want to break away. Don't do that. Don't do that, or you'll be in another someone else's domain very quickly, and you will lose. You can get away with it for, you know, different clan organizations got away with all kinds of stuff for years, and one morning they woke up, and someone else was in power, someone else was putting the screws to them. That's the way this stuff works. It always works that way. The hourglass will flip at a certain point in time, because it gets too heavy in one direction. So that's my solution to the Mexican problem. Just enforce the law. You think the law's nice? Well, no. No. The law is just the law. It's not nice. It's not good. It's not bad. It's not evil. It's just the law. You're used to seeing it work against you. And it's understandable. And in the next episode, I'm going to take a Q&A from the Flames of the East. I'm going to talk to them for a little bit. And after that, we'll be transitioning into some different interview-type formats. I'm going to do with different nationalist groups, some you've heard of, some operatives that you've never heard speak at all. We're going to do some interesting stuff to keep the conversation alive. But I'm going to do a Q&A with the Flames of the East. Yes, the Aryans of the East, specifically the Japanese, and some different questions I had. And I'm gonna be back, and I'm going to go into that. I'm going to have a conversation with the Flames of the East, the Aryans of the East, the Japanese, as well as some of the Koreans and some of the Chinese. They're listening to all this stuff, and they've emailed me with some pretty provocative questions, but some of them coming from a Japanese listener. And it's I don't actually know if it's necessarily male or female, and I'm not going to dare try to pronounce the name because I'll butcher it. But it sounds like Sugar. So I'm going to call him or her Sugar. And I'm going to answer their questions. And the questions talk about, they go right to the heart of the matter, and that is the ancient links between this group of East, the you know, what we will label the Flame of the East, or the ones that sparked prior to 1950. Because let's face it, the Germans went in there, and Asia, the Japanese sparked, and it is in turn sparked Korea and sparked China. But everything started with the Japanese, and so they got to carry the load. They're the epicenter. Some would say the and they've asked questions about this. There's a handful of different theories on it, but whatever it is, they sparked. They caught traction. They just prior to everything on this planet speeding up, prior to what's called the quickening, and that's what we're deep into right now. Prior to 1950, they just sparked, and they went wild. And typically, everything's dependent on everything coming from the West. In the West, we're told Ex Orient Lux, or from East to West, but that's because this group that writes that nonsense are backwards. They're completely backwards. They stumbled into Egypt from the East, therefore they think they're special. Or they stumbled into Babylon from the East, and they think they're special. That's just nonsense. It has nothing to do with us, or nothing to do with the Aryans of the West or the Aryans of the East, but it does have to do with the way they think. But everything goes from West to East, and it's right in front of your face right now. All the garbage on the planet goes from Hollywood all around the world from West to East. A lot of the inventions start in the West and they go to the East. It's just always been that way for some reason. Is it racial? That's part of it. That's part of it. Some of the wise men would say it's 100% racial. I believe it's some link between racial and cosmic. I think there's a link between the two. Because prior to these cosmic events in 1685 and prior to 1950, it definitely affected my race in a particular way, the Aryans of the West. And the biggest consolidated group of them, you know, is the Northern European Germanic, and that goes a lot broader. A lot of people think Hitler just meant Germany. No, it's a lot broader. It includes the British Isles, includes all kinds of interesting things. But that's a brief overview, and I'll give you a couple different versions. One version is purely cosmic. It has to do with the purity of the blood containing the soul, and these souls incarnate East and West, and you have an Eastern version of the soul, something along those lines. But what do you got to do? You got to hang on to it. You got to stay what you are. You got to choose a higher path. That's kind of like a mystical version that one of the wise men had. And I thought that was pretty interesting. Another version would have to be a combination of the two. It goes back to your, when you go into ancient Japanese history or ancient Asian history, there's a link between us. It's not apparent, but it came up prior to World War II. You have a Japanese ambassador and some Japanese dignitaries who showed up in Germany. They showed up and they cut a deal with the Germans, and they talked to Adolf Hitler, and they talked about ancient history, and they talked about some different things. And there are Japanese societies connected to Korean societies and connected to some different societies in China. They're connected to these different castes, these ancient castes, and there's castes in China. I'm not an expert on that, but it's fascinating stuff. And it goes back to the flood, and it goes back to post-flood, when this huge natural disaster happened on this planet. But basically, he went up to Mein Fuhrer, and they had a conversation. The conversation was extremely wild. I'm not going to go into it because it is out there. But if you're Japanese or Chinese or Korean, you can do research on it. You can find out exactly what they talked about. It's a little out there. They have a similar descent. There's a connection, an ancient link, and which is probably why we have a similar sense of aesthetics. We like a particular order. We like a particular unity. How we go about it is different because it comes into racial differences. But we both can pretty much see things on a similar path. We're not necessarily at each other's throats, in spite of what some whites and some Asians might think. It's just not like that. When you get into how the Aryans of the East and the Aryans of the West see each other and everything else, but that's what they were talking about, this link, and this link is based on blood. That's what it is. It's based on DNA. It's a tiny, tiny strand of DNA, but it's very, very critical. And typically, we make some invention here or make some invention in the West, and then it goes to the East, and then you know, they start developing all these other patents based on that and everything else. It's just a call of order. you know, the fullest extent of it, I don't know, but obviously you're special because everyone's special. Everyone has a reason. You got to uphold your cosmic duty. Yeah, that's one of the reasons Japan was in there. They were in China, and it wasn't nice. It's not nice. You've asked me about purification rituals. Well, if you take it out of the context of Aryans of the East or Aryans of the West, if you take it out of that context and you go, let's say you go to Africa and you go to the Zulus and look at the purification rituals, they don't intermarry with anything. They were told to stay a particular way for this year, when this year, whatever that means, year, we're not talking a year as in a year, we're talking thousands of years, since the, you know, whatever they saw back then, they were told to stay what you are until the end comes, you know, until what they were looking for happens. But they were supposed to say what they are, supposed to say Zulus, and there's all different kinds of rituals and purification rituals and everything else. But if you go to the west of the west, and that's how we reconcile, we don't reconcile to the east. I'll come back to this in a second. But if you go to the west of the west, and you go to the Hopi Indians are like a priest class. They're still very much there. They still have all their rituals. They're not as numerous, obviously, but they are there. They are looking for one particular event coming. They are expecting something. And they were told to stay Hopi, be Hopi, do not intermarry for this year. This year is several thousands of years. Pretty fascinating stuff. So I'm guessing that you're supposed to stay what you are. Now, most whites won't listen to that, but most Japanese will, most Chinese will, until this all gets straightened out. But the reason you saw the brutality in World War II, let's go out to Nazi Germany. Let me talk to you about something that most of the world doesn't know about. They were looking at purification, not on a scale that you would think. It's always presented as they were worried about Aryan purity. Well, that's incomplete. They were doing some pretty wild stuff. They would take out a Doberman pincher. They would look at all the Doberman pinchers, all the German short-haired pointers. They put everything to sleep that wasn't perfect. That they did not. What does that mean? I don't know. I don't know what they mean by perfect, but they figured it out. They said, well, the German short-haired pointers were supposed to be all perfect brown, all perfect litter. Any of the ones with any white on it were put to sleep. And so now to this day, they have all perfect German short-haired pointers in some areas and perfect Dobermans. I don't know what that means. Now, does that mean there were going to be Zulus? Yeah, they were going to be perfect Zulus. And they were doing this all around the planet. So when you look at what and there are many ways to go about this. Obviously, what they did was a little over the top and maybe looks like cruel. But when you look at what the Japanese were doing in Asia, they were going into purifications. They first did it internally. They first did it within Japan, didn't you? You did all kinds of interesting stuff. A little bit out there, a little bit barbaric to us, whatever. But that's what we're talking about. We're talking about purification rituals. And then they went into East Asia, and they went into China, and they whatever they were looking for, they found, and they went into purification. And yeah, it was ugly. It was ugly in Korea. Very, very ugly stuff. Of course, what the Hopi Indians are expecting to the west of the west, they're expecting purification rituals on a massive scale, a massive cosmic scale. Now, what's true? I don't know. I can only point to you the obvious. We'll soon see. But when you're asking about this type of thing, you're supposed to stay what you are and hold on to your Aryan soul, because it would be from their perspective, it would be much deeper than bodies. So that's a pretty interesting overview. But if you go into Hitler's conversation with the representatives from your emperor, from the Japanese emperor, prior to World War II, they were fascinating conversations and what they were looking for. And I went on the record and said they found something, and you would be very much involved in that. You just don't fully know the extent of it yet or seen it. Your emperor may not have seen the full extent of it yet. This should be pretty interesting, though. But usually everything comes from us, and when we drop the ball or something screws up here, it puts too much pressure on the Aryans of the East. It screws up everything. Then you have Brahmins, poor Brahmins in India, having to suffer underneath affirmative action. Why? Because we allow it. So it is Western Aryan problems, and these are problems we've went through for 4,000 years. Now, you are lucky in one aspect. You don't have a bunch of pink rabbits that look like the Japanese. On the other hand, they're infiltrating an element of China. One of the certain castes in China, the pink rabbits think they're related to or something on some ancient level, and that is very bad for the Chinese and for the Koreans and as well as the Japanese. But I don't think it's going to go anywhere. It's too little, too late. So I hopefully I answered your question from a cosmic level, but some would say there's an ancient link, which I'm going to go, which I'm going to guess was true. The odds of your emperor sending out dignitaries or sending out representatives to talk to Hitler about the type of things you talked about out of the blue is can't be coincidental, and this type of things that the Hopi Indians are waiting for, and they are not polluted. That means they're not Christian necessarily. They're looking for certain events, and they we've only been around them a few hundred years, and they've been waiting for these events for hundreds of years, or since they first came to Turtle Island, which is what they call North America. So these can't all be coincidences. That's my thinking on the issue, at least. And hopefully that answered your question on that. But I'll go through and we'll answer some more of your questions, because your questions will be interesting for all the European listeners and whatnot. But these things tend to straighten themselves out. You're at a time when everything is going to be straightened out, whether anyone likes it or not. and your next question, excuse me. The next question would be on South Africa. A lot of Asians are interested in what's going on in Africa. When it comes down to Anglosphere, the people running Anglosphere, and that would be that includes South Africa because they're tied to Anglosphere. The Pink Rabbit Banksters and Elisters, they don't like the Boers. Maybe you just woke up, maybe you just realized that. What most white people, most Europeans don't understand is that when they don't allow someone with ethnic interests in their best interest to run things, it ends up affecting all the Chinese in the area. There are Chinese being killed in South Africa. It affects innocent Indians. It affects innocent Africans who have no bone in the fight, who will be the first to delete, you know. Everyone wants the same thing on this planet. There's two things that they want. One, they want a home, somewhere where they control their own destiny. And two, they want, there seems to be a trend toward wanting the Singapores and Dubais. You know, you have 20% of the Japanese, they want to live in a big city. They may not be interested in anything interracial. Not necessarily. I know Europeans living in China because the Chinese will leave them the hell alone. Self-hating white people will drive you up the wall. I know Europeans living in Japan that have lived in Japan, and the Japanese will leave you alone. They won't leave them alone. White people won't leave people alone. But these things tend to be straightened out. But when it comes to South Africa, my sources in the military that have been around there, the type of attacks we're seeing, not only against the Boers, the attacks against the Boers now are there. It's genocide. Yeah, it's genocide under international law. They're on genocide watch, and they could be held account for that. But the attacks are also expanding. They're intertribal African attacks. They're against the Indians, against everyone. When they let it go over to black rule, there wasn't a plan in place. It's not a democracy. It's a shamocracy. They could have went into like a Singapore type thing. And under apartheid, everyone already had their own space. They could have done some interesting things. But what's happened now is that all the other Africans, as the Europeans have come out of all the other African countries, as we've started this consolidation, that's what we've started. What's happened is all the Africans are starting to starve, and so they're coming into the last vestiges, which is South Africa. Most of the problems in South Africa, probably about 50%, 60%, are caused from illegal immigration into Africa from other African countries because they're starving, and then they start stealing, and then they start doing other things, and the attacks and murders, and that's what's going on there. As far as why the people in Anglosphere, Australia, they hate us. They've always wanted a stagnant pond. You see, a stagnant pond, sugar is very easy to control. A stagnant pond, a bunch of pond scum, is easier to control. If you go away today, you come back tomorrow, it's still a stagnant pond. When you look at an ocean, when you look out from Japan and you see the ocean, the Pacific Ocean, you're not going to control that. And that's what our gene pool is. It's one big bucket of creativity. We will bring it time and time again. Just as soon as you think we're out of it, we will bring it. And over the past, since 1685, they've done everything to control it. But you see, it doesn't matter whether it's the American Revolution where we break out partially, 80-90% breakout. It takes all their energy to bring it back under control. And now the big one is the internet. You know, 40 or 50 years ago, I don't know when the internet started, but it was all a bunch of European scientists and defense scientists connected to defense. It's always the same because our survival, yours and mine, is based on defense. It doesn't matter whether you're a little one sitting in Korea. Maybe you're a flame of the East sitting in Korea. Your survival is 80% defensive. the areas of the West, our technological innovation always runs down a defense path. 80 to 90% of our survival is based on that. The internet came out of a defense path, but it's a great example of why our enemy hates us. Every time, just when you least expect it, we bring out something like that, not even intentionally. And it escapes, and it escaped in what, 95, 93, something like that? And when it escaped, it caused havoc. It caused havoc to their media. They can't control it. But yet, at the same time, it takes all their energy to try to bring it under control. They've spent every waking moment. They are spending every waking moment trying to bring that thing under control. Why? Because it's freedom. They can't stand it. It is cosmic in nature. We're waiting for aliens to pop out of your chest. What would you do if an emperor got up one morning and he said, yeah, I'm the emperor of Japan, but I'm not Japanese? I mean, he looks Japanese. He's Japanese for hundreds of years, but now you're finding out he's not Japanese. It's very weird. It's very unnatural. Who knows? Maybe aliens are going to pop out of their chest. Like I said, I don't know. But we've been dealing with this a long, long time, and that's what evil is, unnatural. It can't. It's not in any of the ancient languages. There's no word for evil in the ancient languages because it's unnatural. If you go into like the Indian languages, like the Hopi, there's not a word for evil, but that's the definition of evil, unnatural. When you talk about someone having to own all of Canada, who would need to own all every street in Canada? That's kind of unnatural. And on top of that, you know, you don't see the Japanese emperor trying to replace the Japanese. But that's very unnatural. That's very weird. But that's what the Aryans of the West have been dealing with now for about 4,000 years, in my opinion. And fits and bouts. And now it's coming to a head. The Red Hippo has to fight. But all of Anglosphere is under the same paradigm. It's under the South African paradigm. The problem is that they now realize they need us more than they need oxygen. And so this should be very, very interesting. And hopefully I answered that. South Africa, what's going on in South Africa is a prelude to, it's been genocide against the white Boers for a long, long time, but what's happening is spreading out and they're starting to fight against themselves, and that always happens. You have too many ticks on a dog, the ticks turn around and fight each other. They're not, the dog starts scratching then. Things happen. If they're concentrating on the Boers, fine, but what's happening is they're starting to attack everyone else. That's good. That it's a prelude to the country getting split up, basically. Once the inter-ethnic starts broadening out against racial and tribal, then it offers interesting opportunity, and that's what the military analysis would be. What you're seeing is broad-based crimes against a lot of different groups there, but especially against the whites that are prelude to genocide, and this type of thing is generally a prelude to place being split up. I talked about the Zulus, elements of the Zulus and elements of the Boers maybe doing a deal. We don't know. We haven't seen anything to fruition yet, but if the Boers get a homeland, they survived all kinds of stuff. If the Boers get a homeland, they will be okay. And if the Zulus get a homeland, they'll be okay. But many of these different groups are going to have problems there because we're not going to feed them. Why? Well, we're going to treat them like the bears, and that's what the Aryans of the East are going to do. You're going to treat everyone like the bears. Bears don't need air conditioning. Bears don't need you to feed them. No. No, and when you watch the little white rabbit environmentalists and ecologists down there helping out these native indigenous tribes, when it's total hands off, well, they're treating them like the bears. That's how we naturally treat people. And your question about the indigenous red rabbits of North America, the American Indians, they everyone deserves a home. I got all kinds of land. I just don't have a home, and because I don't have a home, they don't have a home. The solution they came up with for the Lakota Republic, very creative. It's not destructive. They're not walking around trying to murder people, and they're trying to find creative solutions. They're also trying to figure out what is going on here. those are all relevant questions. And you know, anytime someone's trying to make creative progress, you know, they're doing everything by the law. They're doing everything under international law. And that's why the average American hasn't heard about them. The Mexicans are doing everything very, very wrong. The Aslan is going about it very, very wrong. They're going to end up in a lot of problems. But yeah, everyone gets a home with me, except those that say no one gets a home. But the reason they're having problems is because we have problems, and we got an issue to resolve here. Your question about nationalism in Europe and Hebrews and white nationalism. you know, they had a limited window of opportunity. They should have started in 95, 98 if they're going to try to take over a white nationalist group. If you wait till late 2007, you're too late. Everything on this planet is now getting destroyed. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how many dollars you print. Everything's going to get destroyed. The financial system in East Asia is going to be under reckoning very soon. It's time for change. As the man said, he had no idea what he's saying or who he's talking for. That's the way that goes, but Obama said that it's time for change. He was given that to say. And he's right. It's time for change. But right now, they got Nick Griffin speaking at the Ameren meeting, and the Ameren meeting is February 2010. It's too late. It's too late. In fact, what many elements of their elites are worried about is, one, they're finding out that the top of the top has sold them out. They can't, they are in trouble. And when they're in trouble, they start selling each other out. And so they're really panicked. They're not worried about getting their new world order now. Many elements are worried about their basic survival, and that changes things. And so who knows what kind of deal they tried with Nick Griffin or what they have, but it's unworkable. It's too late, is what I'm telling you. They wanted white nationalism to try to combat Islam. There is no combating Islam. You could wipe them out. That's about it. They're now trying to cut deals, of course, to mend fences to survive. That's not the same thing, really. So am I worried about 2010? They're having a conference that's called Saving Western Civilization. Western Civilization is simply the European gene pool thrown against the age of Pisces. Pisces is over. We're coming into Aquarius. It's not going to be the same thing. They're trying to save Judeo-Christianity. That's over. That's yesterday's religion. You won't see Aryans of the West practicing Hinduism very much, and you won't see Aryans of the West practicing Zoroastrianism. Why? Because we're always onto something new. For the same reason we don't speak our ancient languages. We're always onto something new. It's the way we operate. And of course, it is always, everything's always racial. Race is very real. The fact, you ask me why Aryans of the West, Western Aryans, do not think racially, because race is real. One of the racial characteristics is that they don't think racially. There's only a handful that will ever naturally be ethnocentric. Yours truly is not ethnocentric naturally. Western Aryans just don't think racially. The groups that think racially are typically either mixed or African or something along those lines. They are very, very racially inclined. They're not inclined toward much else, but they're very racially inclined. But Aryans of the West are non-racial. They are non-racial thinkers. They are universal thinkers. And that puts them in danger all the time. But that is racial. That is racial. So why would they let... there's a combination of things. In South Africa, you have a bunch of people that don't think in racial terms. Naturally, they don't, really. There's only a handful that will. And the handful that will is going to be because of negative or repressive conditioning or environmental factors. Even your hardcore lone wolfers, they are not naturally racial thinkers. 90-something percent of them will be through environmental conditions or through negative or repressive conditioning. It's just the way it works. The good news is someone understands how it works, obviously, because there's a lot of repressive and negative conditioning. But that is one way to get a lot of racial thinkers. But that is racial. And people running Anglosphere, certain parties, especially the Hebrew elites, are known for taking advantage of this. And one of the reasons the mantra and things like the mantra that is on the front page is so important is it helps those that have a racial mentality, those that have become ethnocentric, get moral authority. I talked about this in the first MP3. I always talk about moral authority. I want those that are ethnocentric always having moral authority to speak for all the white rabbits, because it puts all the other rabbits in the area really in a safer ground. Because we don't have little weapons. You're not going to do anything against white rabbits unless some white rabbit in charge wants it that way, and they can turn on you. This crew that is in so much trouble, they don't care who dies as long as they don't die. That's how they think, and they don't even care if their underlings die, as long as they're families. You know, they all think in terms of families. It's almost like a class structure, but it's based on families. That's just the thinking. But the fact that they don't think racially, well, that is racial. They can think racially from environmental conditions, and they can think racially from negative conditioning. That's it. But that's racial. You have to deal with what you have. Race is real. You know, you got these lone wolfer types you mentioned, and I'll go into them for a few. Let's just go a little longer. But you got those that say, you know, the white man was fundamentally changed. Well, you can't fundamentally change because race is real. You can tweak things. You can, once you know how he operates, you can make him move your direction. But that's what the talking points and that's what the mantra are geared for, is to give you more authority. So when you're speaking for them, you don't have some lone ranger or some self-hating white baby boomer speaking for them, which puts the whole planet in danger. Believe it or not. Yeah, if white rabbits, if the Aryans of the West don't do what they're supposed to do, then you can't do what you're supposed to do, then the whole planet gets screwed up. Everything goes backwards, right? Everything goes upside down. So it's all related. But they just take advantage of the natural traits we have, pretty much just like a parasite would. And we're not necessarily talking about the Hebrew elites. There are plenty of parasites on the other side. It doesn't matter. They're all pink rabbits. And there's a huge brew of pink rabbits now in China. And they will put the screws to those flames of the East, period, because they're progress. They can't stand progress. They want the stagnant pond. They want the pond. They don't want the ocean. They don't like dealing with the oceans. Too much uncertainty. Especially if you've got the Aryans of the West running around. The white rabbits will run around and do something, invent some new kind of new type of fertilizer. Next thing you know, carrots start growing right and left, and it causes all kinds of other problems. It's too hard to get a hold of. And they got to spend all their energy trying to control our creative energy, and it's since 1685. It's just been too big of a fight for them. The last 50 years, they bit off a lot more than they could chew. And now the chickens come home to roost. But the fact that they don't think racially is racial. Yeah, the only thing you can do is move them in your direction. The only thing you can do is learn to use an energy flow and learn what they are and learn to not necessarily try to control it at first base or second base, but in baseball you don't have to control first base. All you got to do is make sure your opponent doesn't get that many home or doesn't get as many men across home men and women across home bases as you have. You know, you have baseball in Japan. Our enemy's been on third base. My enemy's been on third base since the 70s. They've been on third base since the 70s. They can't get home. The red hippo can't get home. He can't get his little pink rabbits home. Good. It's funny. It's very demoralizing, though, to be on third base looking at home plate. Wesley Clark thought he was at home plate again in 2002-2003. They weren't. So it becomes funny. Why? Because, you know, if you let it go into late 2007, you're never getting home. Someone else is going to be able to dominate. It's just the way it goes. But they allow things to go way too long, and they've been hammered behind the scenes in some interesting ways. And the story hasn't truly been written. It's like our ancient history. It hasn't truly been written. But you asked me about low-cost labor. Low-cost labor is something we've had to deal with off and on since probably for 4,000 years as well, because this crew has always dealt with the same paradigm, and the paradigm has worked very well on this planet past 4,000 years up until the past 20. And the paradigm is conflict and scarcity. It doesn't matter whether they hijack France or hijack Spain or whatever. Usually they run it in the ground over a couple hundred years. Now everything's speeding up. What took them a couple hundred years to go through a country, now they went through in like two or three decades. It's just speeding up. But it's all based on conflict and scarcity. And anytime you see conflict and scarcity, you will see low-cost labor. Typically what would happen is they would go to war. Why? Well, it's conflict. They create a problem to get a reaction, to get a solution. The solutions are usually a private central bank bastion gold. Gold has to be mined. Who mines gold? Slaves. What do you get slaves at? You get slaves from going to war. So it's one big chain reaction. But that's where it comes from. And, you know, chattel slavery was very, very honest. It's what you see is what you get. Bringing over poor people from some country and them wanting to come to work for a few dollars an hour, well, that's not very honest. That's very deceitful. You know, like the Mexicans, that's very deceitful. But we've had this crew running Anglosphere as always falls in the same paradigm, conflict and scarcity. They don't know anything else. They can't do anything else. They are pink rabbits. They're diseased. Now you have a crew in China like that, a section of the Chinese. They're already trying to bring in Vietnamese. As the workforce gets older, they will do that. Conflict and scarcity. They cannot, once their minds are made like that, they cannot be changed. They are diseased. They're not necessarily, It's not necessarily Judaism, capitalism, or communism, or even socialism. It is anyism. Yeah, there's a mindset, and it is cosmic. And once they take it on, once they take on that mindset, once that red hippo bleeds that red on them, they're pink. It doesn't matter if they're black rabbits. There's a pink rabbit now. They're no good. They're anti-rabbits. They're the antithesis of a rabbit. And that's what pink rabbits are. They're the anti-rabbit. But that's what they are. Backwards. Upside down. They like everything backwards. They don't like harmony. They don't like, they like a stagnant pond full of scum that can be easily controlled. They're diseased permanently. And that's just the way it goes. But low-cost labor, it doesn't really matter whether it's chattel slavery of Africa. Most listeners, even the white ones, think that, the people running Anglosphere got rid of chattel slavery because it was to free blacks. Well, no. No, they're too expensive. Africans are very, very expensive. In fact, their main crew thinks that that they've known about this for hundreds of years, that Africans become very expensive to maintain. The reason they let them go is because they're too expensive. There's also another reason. They're very, very greedy. If you look at the chattel slavery of Africans, only a handful of families profited. And there was only so many licenses sold. And those licenses were only controlled by a handful of companies. And these groups are very, very greedy. So if one, even within their own group, is getting more money than them, they get very upset. And so that's why it happened. It was making tons of money. It just wasn't making tons of money for enough a broader group. And second, when you get into this thing in the South, it destroys the middle class. Low cost labor always destroys the middle class. Right now, there are Africans out of work. African in America, they're out of work because of low cost Mexican labor. It's the same thing. People that say Europeans benefited from African slavery, Europeans have never benefited from low cost labor. No one ever benefits from low cost labor. The Zulus will not benefit from low cost labor from another tribe. It's only a short-term thing. It always kills it. You cannot get something for nothing. There's no such thing. When you make the choice of low-cost labor, there are consequences. Africans were very, very expensive to maintain, and it was very profitable, but only for a handful. There's only like 2-3% of families in the South that own slaves. And what it did was it killed the middle class. That's what low-cost labor does. Whatever the visas are to get in that takes place, that all the tech workers in America are ticked off over. What it does is it kills that labor pool. That's all it does. It eats away at it. You cannot have something for nothing. You have to stay within your own, and you have to breed up your own, and have some more babies or whatever, and do the best you can do. But that's it. Anytime you see any Western tribe fall into low-cost labor, get the hell out of there, because it will be disastrous. Low-cost labor has never been a solution. It doesn't matter whether it's the Roman slave revolts. It doesn't matter whether it's in Greece. It doesn't matter whether it's in ancient Egypt or Babylon. It's always the same paradigm with these guys, because it's the same mindset, same crew. And right now in Anglosphere, all this low-cost labor, it will not go anywhere. And it isn't going anywhere. It's their doom. It is their doom. Their plans cannot work. It's where everything's going to fail on them, and that's what you're seeing. So it's kind of entertaining. In a perverse way, it's entertaining. It's a long time coming, but low cost labor doesn't do anything. And African and chattel slavery, it was very expensive. It made a lot of money for a handful of people, but that's it. You can't develop anything with it long term. Right now, Africans are extremely expensive to maintain. If you let the Zulus develop as Zulus, if you let the Sudanese develop as Sudanese, you're fine. But when you start trying to put them under different models, some groups can adjust. This group got very spoiled because Europeans can continuously adjust. Very dynamic. The Indians, the North American red rabbits, the indigenous red rabbits in North America, they closed down. Under the social engineering, they close down. They're dying off. The Africans become very expensive. They just eat away at everything. But it's not their type of natural system. They got to go back to the basics. So it's kind of entertaining, but they've been well warned against this. They knew better. They're starting to think that they were all slaves are equal, but some are more equal than others, namely their own families. Now they're starting to realize, well, there's a big difference. You know, they're starting to realize how real this thing race is. If you take that all animals are equal, but some animals more equal than others, you're going to get yourself in trouble. If you take the view that all rabbits are equal, you're going to be in trouble. If you take the perspective view that all rabbit groups and tribes and races are unique, and you got to let them go about something in their own unique way. You got to give people what they want. Well, then you're not going to get yourself in trouble. So they got in trouble because of their mindset. And hopefully I answered your question. Yeah, low-cost labor is not. When you see these Africans saying America got rich over it, no. America's African slaves have cost America everything. In fact, it's cost the people running Anglosphere everything, according to them. Their doom has been Africans, low-cost labor. They tried to stretch an ancient Egypt paradigm too far, and it won't work in a modern economy. They can't change. They don't know how to change. So this is going to be very, very entertaining. How this comes about. So when you see low cost labor in Japan, no, you need to have more babies. The businessmen need to calm down. You know, businessmen can't run. You know, everything has to be what's good for the long term preservation and stability of the flame of the East. Not what's best for long term preservation and stability for the businessmen. That doesn't work that way. You know, right now they got Mexicans picking strawberries in parts of America. Well, you mechanize that. Our strength, 80% of our strength is defense, and our technological innovation runs down that path. We got all kinds of different mechanizations that can be applied to picking strawberries right out of the defense industry. It's happened. It's already happened. So they could come out with a government subsidy. They could help them out. They could, if you're honest with them, if you tell them what is up, why we can't take this approach, they will allow you to do that, and the strawberry farmers will be allowed. Lot better off, and you won't have these low-cost labor problems. But here's another thing. We don't survive based on birth rates. We are 80% of our survival is defense. That means putting all these other breeding tribes around us is actually, in the short term, it looks dangerous for us. In the short term, it looks suicidal. But it's actually very dangerous for them, because we're not going to outbreed them. Putiput is not going to outbreed anything in the Caucasus. He's just not going to. He doesn't have to. He has to get into position for a clean break and then exercise ruthlessly. And someone like that will do it. He has to get in position for a clean break in Europe. And him and the German soft power and Kremlin soft power will exercise it ruthlessly. And you can change things in an instance with the type of weapons they have. So that's why it's dangerous for everyone to take this approach. But they didn't choose this approach. I didn't choose this approach. Someone else chose it. And there is no forgiveness in the universe. There's just choices and consequences. You asked me about the Asian fascination with Putin and what the Russians have done. Well, you know, he's a front man, but he's done some brilliant things. Just recently, you were talking about the different European nationalists and whatnot. I don't really the things that the Russian nationalists are going through and the Eastern European nationalists at whole reminds me of Europe in like the 15th or 16th century. They think, you know, the Latvians are better than this group, and it's just a bunch of petty nationalism. What I'm looking at when I look at it isn't the petty nationalism that maybe the skinheads look at and they say, well, at least they're ethnocentric. No, I'm looking at what they're doing at the top, because what you have in a Russian, German, Italian axis, you have a clean break for Northern Europe. You have a clean break. A clean break in more ways than one, which will allow a clean break in North America, which will allow a clean break across the British Isles, which will allow a clean break for the flame of the East. It's one big chain reaction, but that's what's going on. They're preparing for the clean break. And I don't know, not that it's going to be clean, but this should be pretty interesting. But he's done some brilliant things. And just recently in Turkey, the Russians get away with doing stuff that they just shouldn't get away with. But my enemy is in so much trouble that they can't keep an eye on everything. I'll give you an example. This will answer your question about Turkey and whatnot. The Turks have not really had a foreign policy in 100 years, at least 90 years, since the Ottoman Empire. And they don't have their international relations is generally done through NATO or the Israelis help them or something along those lines, but they don't really trust anybody. Well, the Russians talked to the Turks into coming over and talking to Armenians, you know, kind of reconciling the past and trying to go forward. But the Turks didn't realize, I don't know why they didn't realize this, that Armenia is basically controlled by Russia, and Armenia likes it that way. Armenia is a European Christian country in the middle of a hostile territory. And the Russians know that, and the Russians always help them out. So it's kind of like Armenia can be a Russian proxy, but they don't mind it. They don't mind Russia in there helping them. Why? Because it's very safe. It's very safe having someone like that in there helping you, right? You're a little European Christian tribe sitting there in Armenia. You got problems. Well, you want Putiput in there looking out for you, selling you weapons, putting you in, and they got defense packs with them. They got their own one of their defense groups. It's not the SCO, it's the other one. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but they like it that way. I don't know what the Turks are doing, so the Turks went in there and talked to them. But there's a chain reaction. That problem, that immediately creates a reaction by the other Islamic countries. Azerbaijan. Russia is connected to Azerbaijan, and Azerbaijan is connected to Iran. I've talked about this before. But when they did that, Azerbaijan immediately says, what's the Turks doing? You know, the Turks, Armenia is, Azerbaijan consider Armenia an enemy. For some reason or another, they consider Armenians an enemy, and I don't know their whole history. I'd have to do some digging. But they got freaked out by this. So immediately Azerbaijan cuts off Turkey and wants to deal with Russia. So now Russia basically in that area has NATO totally cornered. The Turks have done it's almost amateurish. Why? Why NATO would let the Turks do this? Well, NATO looks to be over. But that's one example. That shouldn't work. That shouldn't work. You know, Putiput creating a problem, which gets a reaction from the Azerbaijan, which he comes in with a solution. That shouldn't work. That's the basics. That's 101. NATO should be out there and say, wait a minute. If you're going to do a deal with the Armenians on anything, if you're going to talk to anything, you can't let them roll back. You can't let the Russians roll back and grab Azerbaijan and grab some new deals with Azerbaijan and start opening up a relationship. That's a straight way into Iran. I mean, it's just comedy, but I could sit here and go over this with you every day. When you're in trouble in this world, you don't really think about the basics. You think about survival. And you've got to get out of a fear-based mindset. You know, most of the white nationalists even have to get out of a fear-based mindset and get into an offensive mindset. It starts with words, basically. It starts with a consistent message. But our enemy is now in a fear-based mindset. They're grasping at straws. They're worried about where you're going to exist on this point. I mean, they're worried about survival. And when you're worried about survival, it's a totally different mindset. I think we can agree on that. Let's see what else you want to talk about. I'm sure all the listeners be interested in this stuff, or if they're not, they can turn it off. It's free. Let's see here. You asked me a very provocative question, Sugar. You asked me, most of the listeners are very clear on the Bolshevik Revolution. The Bolshevik Revolution, you have 300-some-odd Europeans that went in there. They toppled the Tsar. They murdered a lot of people, and they caused a lot of ethnic conflict. They brought the country down. They brought the country into chaos, and then they resurrected some communist state on it. So we have a clear pattern, hijacking, murdering the kings, and then a lot of ethnic conflict. That's basically what it was, tremendous amount of ethnic conflict, and especially against toward Christians, especially against toward Slav and the White Army. What you're asking me is, did it ever occur to me that paradigm was active in ancient European history? Yes. Yes, it has. Because time and time again, as you pointed out, you have the same thing. You see, we racially do not walk around hijacking things. We just don't do it. Putiput may do it because he's been trained to it by the KGB, but you know, some different groups may do it, but that's training. We do not. We naturally, when you talk about Europeans coming into North America and running over the indigenous Red Rapids of North America, that's all they did was run them over. They're expanding. When a tribe's expanding, it doesn't matter, and you have an 80% defensive tribe. Our tribes aren't based on birth rates, but yet at the same time you have an expanding birth rate among a defensive tribe, someone's going to get run over. And they got run over. But we didn't hijack them. We just ran them over. When Japan, the Japanese birth rate exploded prior to World War II, all of Asia shook all the way to Hawaii. They didn't have anywhere to go. You're 80% defensive. You're samurais. You're Bushido. You're going to go whip someone's tail. You're going to go clean some stuff up. You're going to take over some other countries. Right now in North America, we have Lakotas. We have Comanches. If I were to take out them, create one big take them and expand their birth rate, and point them toward Mexico with some modern weapons, all of Mexico would be Comancheco or Lakotoco. It's not because they're bad people. They are defensive. They have to be able to defend themselves. And I'm not necessarily talking about looking for war. Most of the listeners think the Indians were always looking for war. No, no one looks for war. War is pretty much disastrous for tribes. What I'm saying is, if you're expanding birth rates among a defensive tribe, that energy is going to flow, and someone's going to get run over. The Japanese, your people are not bad people. But if you take the Japanese out, you explode the birth rate, they've got to go somewhere. Someone's going to get run over. And all of Asia shook all the way to Hawaii. Well, that's the way it works. The Comanches right now are very, very different. I'd say 80 to 90% of their survival is based. They have to be able to have a home is somewhere where they control their destiny. They have to be able to control that. They have to have good relations, and they have to be able to defend that home on some level. It may be through international laws. It may be verbally. It may be through honest agreements. There are many types of defense, but they're going to be defensive. They're not going to be able to outbreed people, but they don't have to. The Comanches didn't have to outbreed anything. And they couldn't outbreed whites. They just got run over. And they understand that intrinsically. They understand that something's wrong that they can't put their finger on. That something is, there's a contradiction here. There's a big contradiction between their neighbors next door who are white that they like and George Bush, who something seriously is wrong here. Something is seriously wrong. So they understand that. They're like me. They're waiting for aliens to come popping out of some of these guys' chests. The whites don't really understand how to articulate it, and they basically feel bad themselves, you know, some kind of guilt because they think they're related to these people. And what's funny is the George Bushes of the world don't think they're related to us. It's very weird. You get into these conversations when you get into European royalty. And what can I say about European royalty? You've asked me about them. Well, there's a certain contradiction in Her Majesty's thinking. There's an inconsistency in their thinking. Her Majesty says that all subjects are equal. Her Majesty says that someone born in a third world hellhole is just as much her subject as some little English kid who was born in London. Some little English indigenous white rabbit of Europe. Her Majesty's thinking is deeply flawed. It's inconsistent. Because Her Majesty is Her Majesty based on birth. To whom she was born, to how she was born, to what city she was born in, to what family she was born in. Her whole entire, Her Majesty is Her Majesty based on birth, right? What race Her Majesty happens to look like. All these things matter. They make Her Majesty Her Majesty. But if you go into Her Majesty, it's okay, all subjects are equal. It is fundamentally flawed. And many of the European royalties have shared this trait for a long time. It is flawed. It is deeply, deeply flawed. The Emperor of Japan does not have such flawed thinking. Lucky for you. But we've had to deal with this a long time. Is there a reason for it? Who knows? Like I said, we're waiting for aliens to come busting out of them. But I don't know what to say other than that there's an inconsistency in her thinking. And that could cost them everything. She might end up being the Queen of Mumbai and nothing else. We're spread out over a lot of land. Russian-German axis immediately gives us a home. The best and brightest could be gone. And it wouldn't be the first time European tribes have got up and got out of there. The rest of them just stay around and brown out. So hopefully that answers your question about European royalty. Most of them are worthless. They look like us, but they have no loyalty to us. And putting someone like that in a position of power is extremely dangerous, because they all act like their own little islands unto themselves, you know, a class unto their own. Again, to get back into the Bolshevik, that brief tangent there, to get back into the Bolshevik Revolution and how this template applied. If the listeners would have an open mind and they look at not who did it, because we're not sure of their names. When you get into names like Christopher Columbus and Cortez, there's a lot of controversy around them. What Sugar has asked me is this template for the Bolshevik Revolution, he's seen it time and time again. I went off on that tangent about defensive tribes because it's important to make a point. We do not naturally hijack things. 300 Europeans are not naturally going to show up, hijack Mexico, hijack a Mexican city, kill the emperor, take him hostage, and then kill him, end up killing him, and bring the whole place down through ethnic conflict. We're not going to naturally do those things, really. Now, a million Europeans might show up, run them over, and take everything. That is simply tribal. The Indians, you know, the Comanches could expand. They could run them over. They could run over and make Mexico Comanchico. That's simply tribal. You're dealing with expanding tribes. But what you're asking me is something very provocative. You're asking me if this template, do I think this template held for certain places in South America and certain places in our ancient history and whatnot? Well, time and time again, we've seen the same thing. A few hundred show up. They kill a king. They kill royalty. They hijack the top. Then they bring the whole place down through ethnic conflict. The Mexican, the big empire of Mexico, some of the beautiful areas were not brought down by Spanish soldiers killing everybody. They couldn't. They were brought down through ethnic conflict, by poking ethnic conflict, by killing kings, hijacking things in ethnic conflict. But you ask a provocative question, and I can't answer it, honestly, other than we don't know. But yes, you're right. Those aren't our traits. Our traits are not hijacking an ethnic conflict. We don't do that. We run people over, no different than any tribe expanding, especially a defensive tribe. You got a 90% defensive tribe like the Europeans, 80, 90% expanding birth rates. They got to go somewhere. They're starving. They come to North America. Someone's going to get run over. What's funny about when they first showed up in North America, if you look at the Pilgrims, they thought the Indians were just like them, but painted red. Just as late as 1965, you'd see the self-hating white baby boomers, who I call schwa babies. White people out there say, well, blacks are just like us, but they're painted black. They are that universal. You see, their racial natures are not think racially. Now, some of the others showed up, and they thought a totally different way. Yeah, there would be a handful of pilgrims that say, wait a minute, they're very unique. You've got to understand that. They're not just like us, but it's only a handful. But that is our racial trait. But your question is provocative. I can lay it out for the listeners, but I can't really answer it. Time and time again in our history, I can talk about there's elements in Babylon where a city gets hijacked, someone is killed, and the whole place comes down. They open the borders and ethnic conflict ensues. You can compare and contrast the Bolshevik Revolution, elements of Bolshevik Revolution, with certain elements of revolutions going back a long, long time around European tribes. Do I think it was us? I don't. I admit, at the Bolshevik Revolution, you have a handful of Europeans, but by and large, it was Hebrew. By and large, it was Hebrew crew in there. Do I think that Christopher Columbus maybe wasn't who he says he was, and all these different guys weren't maybe who they say they are? Well, history is written by the people who wrote it. We wouldn't really know. But there is a lot of. Right now, we're in a lot of different conflicting messages, according to revisionism. On one end, you say Christopher Columbus discovered America, and they'll put out a special. Then they'll come out with this long thing on the Templars discovering America. Someone knows something. We're going to find out all the truth. We're going to find out the whole truth. But that's a provocative question, and you're right. We do not act like that normally. If we're expanding, we'll do some things. A handful of Aryans searching for gold can do some things, but we don't exhibit those traits consistently. If we did, it would be simply an anomaly. We do not hijack things normally and bring it down through ethnic conflict. We run people over when we're expanding. That's it. No different than the Japanese. And that's as simple as I can put it. But when you see these cities in South America get hijacked by known famous Spanish explorers and whatnot, and some of those different things, sometime it may be us looking for gold out over their heads, but some of these instances are too common. They're too recurring in the past 4,000 years. So you ask a provocative question, I can't answer it. But someone knows, because over my lifetime, especially through the 80s and whatnot, there's been a lot of heat on the Christopher Columbuses. And now they're inserting that the Templars founded America. Someone knows something about these different groups. And maybe there's a connection between them. I don't know. But you are right. You can compare and contrast it. In fact, usually it's the same number. It's only 300-something. 300-something shows up, they murder a king, the whole place comes down, and then they stoke ethnic conflict and the place is destroyed. It's always something common. There's a common element there. So you're very, very clever to point that out. Most Aryans of the West would not see that. But you're right. It's not our traits. The only trait we have that I could tell you that's very difficult to understand to this world is that the indigenous white rabbits of Europe are not racially inclined at all. That is racial. That's why they have to have ethnic leadership, because if they don't, it causes problems in the world because of the type of weapons we have and what can happen. Because this group's in trouble, they won't hesitate to kill anything on this planet to stay out of trouble. And they need us more than they need oxygen. In fact, they need us as much as they need oxygen, if not more. You know, every time they breathe, they worry about this. Why? Well, you know, when you try to, if you go to war against the world, you're going to end up in trouble eventually. It's just the way it works. But the red hippo, that's the red hippo. And this has went a little bit longer, and this has been maybe a provocative conversation for some of you to listen to. And Sugar, I hope I answered all your questions, but since these things never get talked about, I might as well be the one to talk about it. But that's why it's so important to be on a consistent message, those that want to be on one. And it's so important to understand how one works so you can recognize one, especially for the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, because those that are ethnocentric have to be taking power consistently on a local level. That's where it starts, and it starts internally. It starts internally to every listener. Because if you don't, you put everyone else in danger on this planet. You know, like I said, there's two types of organic society. Blood, which is the most organic substance known to man, and we can't change what we are. A white rabbit can't change themselves. A black rabbit can't change themselves. Indigenous yellow rabbit of East Asia cannot change themselves. You just can't. Then there's another type of society, freedom of association. You choose to be there, and they chose to have you here. The danger with indigenous white rabbits of Europe spread out over all this land is we didn't necessarily choose. We didn't vote on any of this stuff. So it becomes kind of dangerous for a lot of people, not just the white rabbits, but everyone. Right? I mean, you know, the Indian stuck in South Africa right now, the Hindus, they didn't choose that. That's not good. That's not moral. And I don't know what else you want me to talk about, but I can end this right here. And we're going to transition into some funny interviews. I'm going to be doing interviews with other European nationalists and all kinds of different things. And we'll keep the conversation alive. And I do answer questions, because sometimes in answering questions in this way, someone else can learn something or get a different, more provocative view, or at least be entertained for an hour and a half or so. But this is the end of number 18 of Follow the White Rabbit. This is the end of another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. Follow the White Rabbit, again, is a game that will teach you practical politics. Practical politics is practical because it is non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is voting politics or rule-based politics. And the ultimate, of course, is full-spectrum practical politics, engaging and taking down an opponent, a system, by any means necessary, within the rules, within the law, but never breaking them. And this is the end of another episode of Follow the White Rabbit. Thank you for listening.